We're here with State of the Role Playing Game, inaugural episode.
You're here.
Celebrating with Jefferson Bourbon, although I think it's Jefferson Davis is the one that's named after,
really.
Yeah. If you look at the bottle, there's a very white, staunch-looking man on it, which is not Abraham, or...
Jefferson, or Thomas Jefferson?
Dang it. Yeah. Thomas Jefferson. I guess. I don't know what Thomas Jefferson looks like.
Well, he's white. Jefferson Davis is a black guy, so... Oh, wait, no, Jefferson Davis was the president of the Confederacy.
Right.
I'm thinking of, who am I thinking of? Well, this is not about RPGs at all, so...
There's a Civil War RPG out there.
There's probably a ton. Yeah, Jefferson Davis was the president, or what was his title, of the Confederacy?
Yeah, he was the president of the Confederacy. I mean, Robert E. Lee was the...
General.
Leader of the military, but... Anyway.
Now I remember. Okay. State of the RPG.
So the idea of this podcast is to discuss... all things related to RPGs, but I think in the first episode we need to define what we think an RPG is so we can move forward.
So I would say, to me, an RPG... Well, you know, the definition, the breaking down of the acronym is just role-playing game. So any game where you... You know, I'd keep it as broad as saying any game where you have an emotional attachment to the character you're playing as, which is very, very broad. But, like, you know, if you like... If you have an emotional investment because of some slight narrative. So, like...
Some choice you get to make, right? I mean, isn't that... Games are usually decisions or choices in some way. And so I think... It's interesting you jump to emotional first. I see what kind of gamer you are. Now you give your heart and soul.
Oh, God.
Senpai. I think we should go back to the first kind of role-playing game, or at least what most people think, which is Dungeons & Dragons.
Sure. Tabletop.
I don't know. I'm sure that is based on some other kind of storytelling or narrative game, would be my guess.
From what I know, it was just pretty much tabletop war games, which is like, you know, the predecessors of Warhammer and, you know, games like that, which is with miniatures, pretty much. So it's like that combined with just ripping off the story of Lord of the Rings. So they sort of combined those two things, Gary Gygax, just shoved those together. He was a big war gamer and Lord of the Rings fan.
That's right.
And just sort of shoved those things. First edition D&D is like straight rip of Tolkien.
But what about the idea of talking in character and kind of acting or role-playing? Isn't that from a... That's got to be some older kind of...
It probably is. That I don't know about.
You know what I mean? It seems like...
Like an acting improv, yeah,
like
exercise.
Play acting, almost like a children's imagination kind of game, right?
If I had to guess, I'd say, yeah, it's like a play acting type thing.
But anyway, I think that's kind of the heart of what you were talking about before. Well, part of what you were talking about before is becoming something else or...
Yeah, taking on the personality of a different character. Or maybe allowing an avatar to take your personality or something like that. So, like, I wouldn't say that it's Super Mario. Mario is not an RPG because there's no... Maybe you're emotionally invested in Mario. I never really am. But he's never making any, like, moral decisions on your behalf. Or you're never doing that for him.
Yeah.
Not even that that's... Right. You know, this is getting... I don't even know if I want to put... Because something like FF7, I'm trying to think now. I'd definitely say...
If you get invested in the story?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, no, I'm trying to think if you make any real decisions in FF7. Like, it's kind of...
Yeah, so that's why I think we need to back up, because people kind of take for granted how fluid and open and in the right setting amazing pen and paper RPGs for that reason, because they do have this framework behind them that, you know, games actually use, rolling dice in some form and attributes and skills and... You know, there's some kind of check behind everything you do in the game and a framework that you can kind of play.
Yeah, stuff that ended up lending itself very well to computerization. So
yeah, but in that true form, it really, you need to supply the creative fun of it. You know, everybody's, well, probably a lot of people that have played Dungeons & Dragons have played in a bad group where you don't have anybody supplying, you know, fun narrative, fun...
There's no... You need a reason to be rolling all these dice and calculating these chances. Like, why do I care if this happens or not?
It gets boring super fast when you just are rolling dice and the table is silent and you're
numbers.
Counting numbers and it's like some elementary math that who gives a shit, you know?
It's like an accounting program or something at that point.
Exactly. So I think, I mean, Dungeons and Dragons kind of was its own thing, and you bring up a good point with Warhammer, and so maybe that's the first.
I think that supplied a lot of the numbers side of it.
That's why the divergence of when we talk about an RPG, starting with Dungeons and Dragons, there's this tabletop element of it, which is a grid-based kind of combat system that relies on chance, but modifiers to that chance that make things more likely or unlikely. The idea of hit points for units, stuff like that, comes from kind of the tabletop aspect, but then the narrative storytelling aspect is really what Dungeons and Dragons interjects into that, creating this plot. And as you say, Lord of the Rings, absolutely the basis for the lore behind Dungeons and Dragons, and the idea of a quest and the power of items in the world and things like that.
Yeah, definitely super influential. And I agree with you there that I also agree with you that just like take a big old gulp of fluid and drip it everywhere.
I told you the ice was too much.
It's like, you know, I agree with your second point even more than the first point about spilling drinks. But I think a narrative really needed to, I would say a narrative in some form needs to be there to make it an RPG in my mind.
But it's also interesting that Warhammer is a pretty fun game on its own, right?
Then there's strategy.
It's not Dungeons and Dragons. But if you translate Warhammer to a video game, everybody calls that an RPG, pretty much. I mean, it's a strategy kind of RPG, but every kind of grid based, you know, in Warhammer you have stats and chances to hit and damage roll, calculate, like everybody calls that.
But there's also a big story behind all that too. So there's like factions, there's lore, there's factions and history and stuff like that. So I think that's without those it would be like chess, and with those it becomes an RPG.
So you would argue that Warhammer as a tabletop game is also a role playing game?
I'd say, well, definitely the Warhammer video games. Yeah, I don't know if I'd go that far.
Because that diverges from the idea of being emotionally invested in a character, for instance.
I'd say for sure the Warhammer video games are RPGs because they've got some sort of narrative, you know.
Well, there's also RTS Warhammer games.
Mm-hmm. They, even those have narrative, too.
They're closer to, like, StarCraft, though.
I'd say StarCraft is somewhat, it's, you know, it's a pure RTS, but there's RPG aspects of it in the sense that, like, you know, there's factions and lore.
The single-player campaign.
Yeah, the single-player campaign about. I'm talking about. Online, there's a lore of, like, you know, someone's mom.
Yeah, but would you call Halo a role-playing game, too?
A little bit. Somewhat, yeah.
See, I think I'm a little bit more fundamental. I don't know what the right word. I don't think it's fundamentalist, but maybe strict about the definition. Because I want to see some progression.
So you want to see more of the numbers side. The traditional.
I've become, in my old age, I've become more flexible. Like, I used to argue with people that I didn't think that Zelda, like Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask were RPGs, because even though you build hearts and you build your collection of items, it in Mega Man you do the same thing.
Right.
And it's kind of funny though, because I think we've gone the other way, because there's games like Borderlands and things that people probably do consider RPGs, but Mega Man is the first version of that, but so is Doom, where you build your collection of weapons and you build ammo and you get shields that make, you know, it's just, that's why I think you got to be careful when you, if you go too far, because if you put the tag RPG on something, it just loses its meaning. But I think there is a meaning to the word. I think people can agree on certain
aspects.
Yeah, you can find a consensus on a lot of things.
So, okay, maybe a Halo.
I get what you're playing the role of Master Chief, but think again, like, in the context of D&D, playing a role means interacting with other players.
Yeah.
There's some kind of narrative that you're contributing. Otherwise, you know, Monopoly has a lore to it.
It does.
I mean,
so this, have you played the Half-Life games?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, so there's like a, those are really well known for their storytelling.
And there's some real puzzle aspects too, right?
Yeah. And I guess it's progression in the sense, there's progression in the sense you get new, you know, like a first-person shooter, you get weapons and stronger shit. I guess I'm sort of going to take a step back, and I'd say certain, I guess what I identify as an RPG element would be a good story. So I'd say a good story is associated with an RPG to me. So Halo has a decent story in the sense, it's got a decent story, and in that sense, it has a slight RPG element. But I guess I wouldn't call it an RPG.
I wonder if it's... So something I've been thinking about is... I don't know if it just feels this way because of my age and growing up, but I think
75, by the way. This is a podcast by 75-year-olds.
Well, so Kyle and I are both going to be 30 this year, and I think that we grew up in the golden age of video game RPGs. Probably not... Probably missed the pen and paper golden age, but...
Yeah, probably.
I mean,
White Super Wolf was kicking out. I mean, Rifts was around.
No, we played plenty of our pen and paper, but I don't know that it ever was popular, so let's just scratch that. But, Super Nintendo basically being our first console.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
about it.
I had a Nintendo first. But, and RPGs were shitty on Nintendo. Let's be real. The first two Final Fantasy games were garbage.
Oh, which I didn't even. My first RPG I ever played, I think, was fucking FF7, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think that's...
So, right. I'll tell you, I started...
Oh, no, Super Mario RPG, sorry.
Yeah, and Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
I don't know if I played RPGs on Super Nintendo first. Well, probably around that time I was in AOL chat rooms playing...
AOL chat rooms is a great RPG.
Yeah, Duel of Swords and Duel of Magic. So, they were chat-based RPGs, kind of like Dungeons & Dragons. They had a big... rock, paper, scissors system behind them. People role-played in the chat. You had standings, and you played a character. It was a real form of Dungeons & Dragons online. And
Wizard, Cowboy, Jack. Yeehaw, cast fireball.
Yeah, I mean, you could literally... You got to... Some people used a pen as a weapon if it was a duel of magic, and you got to describe your spells, as did the referee or the... I think they're called referees or... Game Masters or something.
The Game Masters of this game became the admins on Wikipedia. That's the natural progression, I feel like.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I got super into the Final Fantasy games. Like, I played all of them, you know, after they were already out. I think I started with FF8 and then kind of went backwards and forwards. But then I just became so obsessed with EverQuest. I mean, I didn't have a... You know, I had to beg my parents for their credit card, upgrade the computer. It was everything to play that because it reminded me, I think, back to the AOL days of playing with other people again.
Yeah.
And then Dungeons and Dragons after that was like this other, you know, time my mind just was like, whoa.
Yeah, sense of community is really...
Yeah.
You don't get that. That's something that only an RPG can provide, I feel like. So that's sort of a, a square is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square type situation, I feel like. So a lot of good games can have communities, RPGs can have communities, but only an RPG can give you a certain kind of community, which is like a very, very involved one, I'd say.
Well, when RPG, video game online or pen and paper?
I say both in different ways. Like the online ones can give you huge, you know, massive populations of people, whereas the pen and paper ones give you a small, tight-knit one. So the online ones might not be as tight-knit, but they're much larger and much more diverse and, you know, can be a little more unpredictable and fun in that way. But the pen and paper ones, there's like a closer group of friends. And then you like get to know each other as you play. You get to know each other's like quirks.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess we've kind of gotten a little bit away from... defining what an RPG is, mostly my fault of waxing nostalgic about games I used to play, but I think you're hitting on something about the community you build because of the time that you invest in the game, and it's interesting because I was recently reading that World of Warcraft is still keeping a big player base number-wise because the game has basically become really easy to solo, and so you can play essentially by yourself, and it's just this big sandbox world, and you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But,
right. But that's not the appeal that I would have had going into a MMO like that.
Exactly. And I don't think it even lasted for long in vanilla World of Warcraft, although I couldn't say for sure, because MMORPGs had already been refined because of games like Ultima and EverQuest. And it's interesting because World of Warcraft also took elements from even the early MOBAs like Dota for a lot of their mechanics and design for characters and things like that, and how the battleground system worked, the PvP, which was basically a a MOBA within a MMO.
Okay.
I mean, you can still play it, but there used to be tournament, like money tournaments and a pro scene around it.
I didn't know that.
But it's funny how quickly that sense of community always fades because of people becoming different levels in the game, or so people, the game's not good, so people fall off. It really takes something to find that sense of community in an online game, I feel like. But I don't think that's a defining part of an RPG, because I've also played games like Jedi Knight or Jedi Academy and had a clan, and
yeah,
there's like clan wars and you get online at the same time as these guys every night, and you know, you're on a Ventrilo server. So I don't know. In real life, for sure, what you're talking about.
The tabletop
yeah.
style. Yeah. to the point of WoW becoming more accessible to single players. So maybe they still have some community, but you don't need a community.
Yeah.
You're not like limited by not having a community. So like end game stuff, you still need to guild and raid and stuff like that. But up until then, you don't need to do that. So maybe that's the appeal of that.
I think, yeah, you hit on something there, is reliance on other players to accomplish things in the game. In an MMORPG and a tabletop RPG, I think that's really important. Because if you don't need to rely on your party in Dungeons & Dragons, for example, those are the worst kind of games. Because you have one or two characters that are the stars of combat, and if there's too much combat, everybody else is just sitting there, like,
yeah,
waiting.
Feeling like screened or on a battleship. Useless.
Yeah, and it's up to the game master, just like a good game designer, to make non-combat things fun and utility. And I think that's something that RPGs really have going for them, is
they get edited.
But there's things other than combat, which is why you were calling Halo an RPG almost earlier, because the combat isn't a defining factor. You're going to either click attack, or you're going to click a button, or you know, some version of that. So what does it matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in Dungeons and Dragons, that doesn't even exist. You roll dice and you say what you're doing and attacking.
Yeah, it's a description. So Dungeons and Dragons, like tabletop games in general, have this sort of off topic, but tabletop games in general have this like improvisational quality to them. That's sort of fun. The referee or a dungeon master or game master, whatever you want to call it, they of course are encouraged to prepare ahead of time, get sort of outlines of how they want things to go, but that's not how it necessarily goes. The players can do something unpredictable, and so then that's when you get some of the really fun things, is like what would be a game breaking glitch in a video game in a tabletop game is just like, now this is how the story is going. So there's no, things can be unpredictable in that way, because it's just human interaction.
And that's something really cool, I think, about a lot of, well, some MMORPG experiences especially, but the idea that you're off the beaten track.
So yeah.
Like you were saying, in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, the Dungeons Master has nothing prepared for where you're about to go.
Right.
And now you're in this zone where they have to think off the top of your head. I think, I don't know if it's just because we've played pen and paper games, but whenever you get that feeling in a game that you're doing something you're not supposed to do, or you've accomplished something in a way that the game designers had no idea, you know, those are some of the most satisfying moments. And I think that feeling relates really well back to pen and paper games.
Which is why I think strategy plays into associations with RPG, because that allows, the concept of strategy allows for multiple approaches to solving a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of gives you that feeling of like freedom when you can apply different strategies to the same thing.
So that might be an interesting way to define an RPG, because in Halo, I mean, there's one way to, right? You can take cover in different areas or take a different path, but at the end of the day, the execution is going to be you shooting a gun.
Yeah.
No, I guess
sometimes
you
throw grenades.
And you can choose what
which gun to shoot. I'm not defending Halo's RPG.
Well, okay, so, but there's a difference between tactics and strategy.
Yeah,
and there's tactics in Halo, but I don't know what the strategy would be, unless you're talking about a 8v8 capture the flag match or something, right? I mean, but especially in a single player, or in the idea of a narrative, having multiple ways to solve a problem, which isn't true of a lot of linear games you would consider RPGs. They kind of give you the illusion in some ways that you're making a choice. Like, think about how many times you've chosen dialogue options in video games.
Yeah,
and how many, what has it ever,
yeah.
I struggle to think of one time when it was super meaningful.
The Dragon Age games are kind of, well, you know what, they're really pretty good for having a lot of branching choices that will eventually come back, but because they're usually so good at it, when they're not, it stands out. So there's, like, you can have this super long, for a while, I was, like, getting stuck on this boss, and you have to talk to him before you fight him.
Mm.
And, you have this, I kept trying every, because I had to do it over and over again, I tried every dialogue path to see what would happen. And they were all just superfluous. Like, no matter what you say, it doesn't matter. So I ended up just kept choosing the one that my character, in a narrative sense, would never do, but it was the shortest path to get through this dialogue. So,
yeah. So it was, you were min-maxing in a different way.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So that's an interesting.
I mean, I know there's, the BioWare RPGs. You kind of build a score, right, on your character based on what you answer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because the Star Wars pen and paper game has that same mechanic pretty strong, right? You get awarded, what are they, like, force and dark side points based on decisions you make in the game. Or I think you can get force points when you level up because you can expend them. But your dungeon or your game master can also award them to you based on...
If you're doing a super forcey thing.
Yeah, but... Or the idea that when you go dark in the pen and paper game, you lose control of your character unless you're playing an evil campaign. It's interesting that the games let you play out that dark side. I think it was a natural kind of progression. You know, the first Fable was really revolutionary because you could play a bad guy. I remember that being...
Yeah.
Same thing with Knights of the Old Republic.
And, yeah. There's two paths there.
But it... Yeah, I mean, strategy and tactics, I think that those are still probably more of strategy game markers, which I think you have to look at role-playing games as kind of a hybrid. I think
they include a lot of pieces from a lot of different, genres.
Yeah, I think for me the big points are leveling up.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I like to draw some kind of line there, typically. I guess it doesn't have to be a number, but it just feels...
So the sense of progression, numerical progression. I mean...
That's really at the end of the day, what...
So you want to know
as a video game, role-playing games kind of mean...
Yeah, so you want to know that the numbers your character's putting out are going up over time or something, in some way. Your roles are getting higher chance. You're having more success in your attempts to do things.
And I guess just you saying the word role reminds me, but the choice, it's usually at character creation, let's be honest, but also through leveling up, I don't know how else to, but the choice to make different characters, so I can choose warrior, wizard, cleric kind of thing, because that's what's kind of absent from Halo, right?
There's no leveling up at all.
There's no opportunity cost. You don't miss out on the machine gun by picking up the rocket launcher.
Wish I fired that pistol instead of the machine gun just 2 seconds ago.
But when you beat an RPG, you're like, shit, I wonder what kind of spells the cleric got. Or if I chose this skill tree path, or I put my upgrade points in this category, there's a sense of
So choices loss. Are definitely part of an RPG, Not even necessarily, like, leveling up, that's definitely a choice. I like the term tree, like a progression tree, mm-hmm. but also dialogue trees, like if I'd said this, how things would have turned out differently or something like that. Or like item, like trading items, like giving up this powerful thing for something else. What if I'd kept the powerful thing? How would the game have gone for me?
That's what I feel like Zelda Breath of the Wild is more than anything. It's an item building game. I mean, you're trying to amass, your character grows in a very slight sense, but it's all items that you're getting.
Yeah.
That affect you. Which, it's fun, but it also... Building items for the sake of building items, you realize so quickly, though, that, hey, I can already beat this guy. I'm just beating him with more damage on my hits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or I'm taking less damage, but it wasn't a problem. So
that's sort of how Monster Hunter is the same way. There is no... Your character doesn't get any stronger ever, really. It's just... like getting more access to more items, leveling, you level up your facilities to create items. That's all you can level up, really. And the difference is, like, you really need to do it. So it's like, there's hard stops, but like, that's why it's such a grindy game, is because you need to create these items, or else you can't progress in the game.
Yeah, so I mean, do you think, that sense of, but is there a choice in that?
Oh yeah, there's a ton of playstyle. That's where the choice is. That's where the choice is inserted, is that what kind of, so there's items you can create to modify your tactics, like dip smoke bombs and poison items, and there's like playstyle equipment items, like what kind of weapon do I carry? Do I carry a bow? Do I carry a sword? Do I carry a bug on my arm who's attached to a spear who I communicate with and whisper secret orders to him?
Yeah.
Which is a thing.
That's
bizarre. Yeah. It's super
general. What about your character choices?
You just like change, you can change, choose the gender and how they look, and that's and also the arm. You can decide what kind of armor you want. You can customize armor as an item set, in the sense that, like, you know, full sets give you different bonuses. Skill, like, that's also just tactics still, though, decisions like that.
Because I think that was, I'm not gonna, without playing and say the game is or isn't an RPG. It certainly sounds like it is, but even I'm thinking with the
new, more like action RPG.
Yeah, and I used to kind of think, and this was 10, 15 years ago, that if you're hitting a button to attack, that you need to, and you need to aim that attack, or
so is that.
It's kind of hard. Well, exactly, but it's kind of odd with MMO RPGs because you kind of lock on to something and you have rounds of attack, but in a way you press a button to attack. You know what I mean? Or you click on something to attack, but aiming kind of attack. Like, I think that's totally been shattered with games like Dark Souls and really being at the forefront. And there's always been kind of hack and slash with the Heroes of Might and Magic.
So that does remove some of the automatic calculations. Some of those dice, some of the dice rolls are removed.
Exactly. And I think that there's something to be said about that, separating it from more traditional RPGs. Yeah. And again, I don't think there's any good or bad to this calculation of what is and isn't an RPG. I'm not looking, like, personally, I don't care about the
pure
level up number or the calculations going on when I attack. I like Zelda Breath of the Wild. It's very loosely an RPG to me, because I don't think that it has a lot of the factors that we're talking about. I don't think that there's a lot of choice in how you progress your character, which to me is a big deal.
So I guess to come full circle, to me what RPG would mean, I would describe RPG as a set of qualities that games can or cannot have. And those qualities would include, like, strong narrative, a lot of, like, complex systems determining action.
Systems. That's,
yeah.
That's a
like systems, narrative, that's probably it, actually. So games can have some of this, adopt some of these qualities or not.
Narrative or lore? I guess we're back to that.
I guess I'd say lore, too. I'd say a combination of both.
Because I think
narrative
there's
with lore. Narrative with implied lore, at least. It's like Destiny, or like Borderlands, you know, those first-person shooter RPGs, where there's leveling up and but there's, you know,
I think development's got to be in there, because fighting games become RPGs almost if they have, you know, there's a big story to Street Fighter and Tekken,
for sure.
And there's lore, and you're very clearly making a choice of which character you are, but you develop your skill in the game, but the character doesn't get any
exactly.
You're not,
doesn't change.
You're not playing and it's interesting, because I think we've kind of attached what the point I kind of forgot to make when we were talking about pen and paper earlier. Is I think that role-playing game, in that sense, might refer to the idea of you're playing the role of a dungeon master or a player in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it means the class that you pick in Dungeons & Dragons. And so, video games, other than Divinity 2, really is the more recent one, lack that idea of a player playing the role of the opposition, the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not interactive in that way. They kind of distilled the best, the worst parts of what those pen and paper games are. And I think the best part is kind of the development, and there's also that's where all the psychological tricks to get you addicted to keep playing the game kind of come in too, and why a lot of them end up feeling hollow. But then you continually bring up, and I agree with the narrative and the lore kind of make that all palatable, and they make that sense of progression less fake
because exactly.
you're immersing yourself in this lore.
You're attaching imagination to it.
Having
it mean something else than just a number going up.
You're investing in your character for reasons other than your character is getting stronger numerically in the game. But it's also enjoyable to be able to measure things numerically in a game because your progression, I think, is rewarded the most when you can visibly see it. Which is why some MOBAs, I don't like that term, but multi-online...
Mm-hmm. Multiplayer online
battle arena games, League of Legends, Dota, are so rewarding is because you distill the grind of an MMO from 1 to level 50 that takes you, 100 hours into an hour-long game, but you still feel damn proud when you win because you've improved skills. It's a good hybrid of what development means in a first-person shooter game. You're developing the twitch skills, the strategy skills, the tactical skills, and what development means in an RPG, which is numerical strength in your character.
So now you're talking about personal development on the player side, like the human side development.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that's inherent to an RPG, but I'm saying that MOBAs combine that element. And so do certainly other RPGs now. I don't think there's any of that in Dungeons & Dragons, but in games like Dark Souls, there's a certain twitch element to the game that you definitely improve, and pattern recognition, and there's these other skills that come along with your character's numerical progression in the game. I think that's the sweet spot.
I'd say even in pen and paper games, game, there's probably a character, a player, human.
Well, there's no... You can't argue there's any physical aspect to it.
I guess you, burn fewer calories by, you gain more weight by, spending so much time sitting and doing this thing. But...
you resist the bag of Doritos.
Roll! No, I guess any game has some sort of, the more you play it, you learn some, even like poker, you learn trends or something like that.
Well, I think that's what you call good game design, but I also think...
Is poker an RPG? Go.
Yeah, right, exactly. But also in, Final Fantasy games and what we used to think of as RPGs, there's so little of that development of any kind of skill. And in Dungeons & Dragons...
The skill would be meta. It's what do I expect to happen next as an RPG connoisseur.
And the skill in Dungeons & Dragons is almost your skill as an entertainer, because ultimately the only goal is what you make the goal to be.
You can also abuse, mechanics. If you know all the mechanics in the game, you can, learn what's going to interact together. And
yeah. So, you're right. And I was talking about gaining skill through repetition, but also... the kind of physical idea, like esports, right? The competitive aspect to these things. Pretty much all single-player games that don't rely on some kind of twitch reflex or...
Mm-hmm.
There's a very finite skill ceiling to them. If you took two players at the max level, they would do the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But other games, first-person shooters, MOBAs, RTS games... and action games for sure, hack and slash, whatever, adventure games, have a timing, some kind of physical, physiological at least, element to them.
I think part of that, and part of why RPGs have such depth, is because of the systems that they're composed of have so many variables. So when you increase, when you add more variables to the outcome of something, you're increasing the chances of something else happening, so having more characters to choose from for the player, having more options with tactics, having more, a big tree of items to choose from for the players. That makes a very diverse, less predictable game.
Yeah. And that's where, balance comes in, because games that are balanced poorly, if they're single player, you feel... Well, if they're multiplayer, you find out really quickly what's imbalanced and what's not. But if they're single player, it's this weird thing where if you can get through the game with the best and worst weapon, did the choice matter at all?
Exactly.
And that's kind of disappointing, and why I think I got put off single player games, even to where I would play any MMORPG that came out for the free month's trial. That used to be the big thing they would do, pay $30 for the box and get a month for free. And And some of them I would play for longer. You know, we played City Heroes. I played Final Fantasy XI. WoW. Like, all these different games. But I didn't have the worry with them that I was, quote-unquote, wasting my time in a grind because there was other players to show off my shit to. Mm-hmm. If I found out in a game that everybody else was playing that I picked the weakest character in, you know, had weaker gear than them in comparison, but I still got through, well, that... It's kind of the mark of a shitty game, right? Yeah. I just had a harder time playing through for no other reason than I made some arbitrary choice wrong. There was no, you know, there's no context to base a choice on, like, boy, if I would have been smarter, I would have picked this thing in the game. I would have got through the game quicker, easier. Yeah. It was just, oh, you would have been, random luck of the draw. Yeah,
you would have had to have been punished for your choice. Like, I can't get through here because of this choice. I
exactly. need to make a different choice. And it becomes clear that they can't do that, right? Yeah. You're 20 hours in and shit, I picked spear instead of sword. I'm never going to get past this.
Yeah.
So
that's sort of, I just played through Shadow of Mordor, or Shadow of War, which is like Shadow of Mordor 2, which was, it was an okay game. But it did seem like you could get to the end doing a shitty job sort of thing.
I think that's most modern games, to be honest. I mean, and that's fine.
And it had, you could tell there was, like, depth if you want to get it, but you didn't have to get that out of it. And there's, like, a weird, there's an online sort of competitive system. But it's like Pokemon in the sense that you're like training things to fight for you. It's like orcs. Like it's like Pokemon with orcs, but sometimes the Pokemon can like betray you.
I got bit by a Squirtle.
Yeah.
You wouldn't believe it.
It's like I sent out my Charmander and he was like, he had a super fucking British accent. He's like, we're not doing this no more! And he like shoved a dagger in my side.
He's missing his left eye. Grew up in the gutter and cocky.
You're the poison, and I'm the cure. That's what my Ghastly said to me. It was pretty fun for like the orcs. Kumail Nanjiani was an orc, and, like, he actually is. And he's like, he did a Conan interview about it, and he was talking about like how he hadn't heard his actual. He recorded the lines, you know what he recorded, but he didn't hear how it came out in the game, and he was wondering if they gave him like. Any audio like manipulation at all, but it's just his voice. It's just like an orc that sounds like Kumail Nanjiani. And I accidentally killed him in my game. I was trying to capture him, but I accidentally killed Kumail. But yeah, that's an example of a very action, more action than RPG, but some RPG elements of that game.
What about it?
So there's progression. There's like you know, you get numbers on equipment high. You can level up your character. You can get experience points. You can.
It's interesting because it's still. It's like no matter what one thing we focus on, you could still find counterexamples to that thing. Like development and progression happens quite a bit in shooting games,
exactly.
Now, right? Like Call of Duty and all those.
Go on
games
a time wasting website like Armor Games or something like that. Every mouse clicking shooter has progression.
Yeah, but like, so do FPS games.
Oh yeah,
like. You literally get skills and
you unlock
more damage and very RPG-esque things. So
maybe that's been adapted from RPGs as a like psychological trick, like you were talking about earlier.
I think they've realized that it's a way to make almost anything more satisfying is to give it numeric value.
Yeah.
That's what we... There's probably some cultural implications there.
Probably.
Like what there's some
capitalistic things in there too. Like, I want to see this number go up.
And just every RPG is the story of rags to riches, essentially. You start as this poor, weak, incapable person, and you end up
I'm late for the village party. I need to get to the festival.
It probably says a lot. I mean...
Which is also one of the criticisms of, like, JRPGs in particular, but almost all RPGs, is that just the... accusations of derivation to each other, so they're all sort of like cut from the same cloth.
Mm-hmm.
That can get sort of boring when they're done generically, but it also I feel like that's had attention brought to it, and so that you're getting more diverse creators inputting their views into things more. We need to look up at the history of this a little bit, I feel like, because I'm sure there was a like shittier time for RPGs, and maybe we're through it, maybe we're in the middle of it.
I think I dipped out of RPG. I mean, I basically transitioned on to Dota at some point because MMORPGs and single player RPGs just became. I mean, to be honest, I couldn't even play through like Mass Effect and stuff. I wanted high fantasy,
yeah,
kind of tactical RPG game. Like I wanted Dungeons and Dragons in a computer game.
Yeah, I did love Mass Effect. I gotta admit,
I didn't even give it a chance. Yeah. I'm not saying anything about it, and I think it's because JRPGs got very stale.
Yeah,
and I don't think it was me growing up because I think novelty is a real thing.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
The way I heard someone describe novelty recently was basically something you don't have
an expectation for.
The hardware for. Like, something that our natural state of being has nothing.
So you've got
no experience use for this thing. Exactly, yeah. No experience and no. There's no survival use. There's no logical use for it. Okay. Why does this thing kind of exist the way
novelty.
It is? And so that experience of just hitting a button and watching your level goes up is novel at first, but eventually you become conditioned to it and you're able to look back and have some insight on it. You're like, wow, that's stupid.
I think part of it is like the feeling of accomplishment that is not so that it doesn't come with like long time spent or like hard physical work. So it's like I got the feeling that I did something great, but I didn't actually like work physically hard for hours, but I got the same feeling by doing this, pushing a button.
Chemicals in your brain, just like working out or whatever.
Yeah, the endorphins are the same, no matter if I just like kill a dragon in a video game or if I like went to the gym for an hour. But
yeah,
I got one way faster.
Exactly. And I think it's terrible. It'll be interesting to see how people think of the term RPG in the future because all these mobile games that take the basest elements of RPGs and turn them into this addiction machine, a gambling simulator, basically. You know, I
think part of it, too, is, like, there's the time sink that comes in, but I feel like in some ways, a greater time sink lends itself to a greater psychological trick reward. Because you want to convince yourself that, like, this is worth it for the time I spent. So even though you would have had more enjoyment from doing something else for that same amount of time,
it's like doubling down, right?
Yeah.
Every hour you spend more doing this thing, if you stop doing it now, all those hours you spent are essentially wasted.
Yeah, but if you finish it and spend twice the time you could, at that moment you're making the decision, spend that time again, then
it has
to be worth it to you.
And that's what you have to realize when you play any video game, is there's no payoff in the end. So if you're not having fun in the moment, just put it down.
Yeah.
I mean, you paid money for it, but if it's literally a job to you, there's no reason to waste any of your time or AKA money on it.
Take note of the podcast here. If you're not having a fun time with the video game, stop playing that video game. There's no...
Yeah.
Why are you playing it then?
Because the other thing is if you're grinding it like that, it may just be because it's fun for an hour, but not 10.
Yeah.
And
you're chasing the dragon right there.
Exactly.
Trying to get back to something that will never happen again.
I'll just put it this way. I've played so many MMORPGs, and there's always this point when you're playing it and you hit some certain level, and you kill the first creature towards your next level, and you see that bar go up like some minuscule amount.
Oh, man.
And you start to realize
this is
going to
be a slog.
And this is what the rest of the game is.
Yeah.
I got 10 levels to go. I've already looked online at what my next abilities I'm going to get. They're just the same version of the things I've already had.
Yeah.
I'm just going to press this button in the same way over and over again.
I played EverQuest as well, and I never got, I think, 55. Level 55 was that for me, because I was like, eh. After that, it wasn't really fun anymore.
It's faster or slower. Like, Final Fantasy XIV, which is a really acclaimed game, it's had a couple of resurgences. Like, I don't think other MMOs have ever seen, right? Like, player base comes back, you know, resurges again. But it's still, you get to that point where it's like, I'm going to be finding raiding parties to grind out gear to eventually have gear raids. And that's why I'm really excited for Camelot Unchained coming out. It's going to be grindy in the sense that things aren't going to be easy, but it's going to keep the sense of reliance on other players and the social kind of aspect. And hopefully, I hope it keeps that sense of exploration and kind of I'm doing this on my own. Like, I'd like to not look up shit online. I think that really ruins games again. Like, as soon as people just know the most efficient way to do things and just following a guide.
That really removes exploration and the sense of discovery.
Yeah, you're doing work. You know what? RPGs are both, they have the biggest capacity to be like work, but also I think the biggest capacity, going back to pen and paper, to be this narrative, social, you know, emotionally invested, systematic experience.
Yeah.
So you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, I think this was a good talk.
Nice.
This is when we play our theme song.